Okay, good evening all. Welcome to this Kingborough Council meeting on the Monday the 15th of February. It's 5:30pm. My name's Dean Winter. I'm the Mayor of Kingborough. Pleasure to not only formally open the meeting but also welcome council staff, members of the public and also those of you watching online through Facebook to our council meeting. My first job is to confirm with the GM that the tape has started running. So it's confirmed, so just so people are aware, not only do we live stream on Facebook, but we also record a backup copy and we place that that recording of the meeting on our website, which is available for probably many years to come. So you can always listen back if you need to. Next item is the acknowledgement of our traditional custodians. I'd like to begin tonight by paying our council's respect to the traditional and original custodians of this land, the Muwinina people. I acknowledge the contemporary Tasmanian Aboriginal community who have survived invasion and dispossession and continue to maintain and fight for their identity, culture and Indigenous rights. Attendees this evening is myself, Councillor Winter, Councillor Westwood, Councillor Bastone, Councillor Cordova, Councillor Fox, Councillor Grace, Councillor Midgley, Councillor Street, Councillor Wass and Councillor Reid. From our staff this evening we have our General Manager Gary Arnold, our Chief Financial Officer is John Breen, our Chief Information Officer is Fred Malt, our Director of Engineering Services is David Reeve, our Director of Governance, Recreation and Property Services is Daniel Smee, our Director of Environment, Development and Community is Katrina Stevenson, our Manager of Development Services is Tasha Tyler Moore, our Customer Services Coordinator is Kelly Nichols and our Executive Assistant is Amanda Morton. And we don't have any apologies because all of our councillors are here with us this evening. Next item is the confirmation of minutes and there's a recommended motion in the agenda that says that the minutes of the open session of Council Meeting number 2 held on 1 February 21 be confirmed as a true record. Would any councillor like to move or second that? Moved by Councillor Fox and seconded by Councillor Bastone. All those in favour, please say aye. Those against, motion is carried unanimously. Next item is to let members of the public know that since our last council meeting we've had two workshops. The first was on the long-term financial plan and the second one was on the Kingborough Ratepayers Association submission paper, which is on compliance and governance issues. Next item, declarations of interest. Does any councillor have a declaration of interest that they would like to alert the council to? No lights are on, so we'll move on to transfer of agenda items. Would any councillor like to transfer an agenda item from closed into open or open into closed? There are none, so we'll move on. Questions without notice from the public. Would any member of the public like to ask a question without notice? There are none at the moment, just so people at home are aware. If you'd like to ask a question, do so from the comfort of your own home. There's an easy way to do it, which is to email kc@kingborough.tas.gov.au. Clearly direct your email as a question on notice to the General Manager and write your question, and then in 2 weeks' time, on the 1st of March, you'll be able to read the answer to your question in a public agenda of Kingborough Council. But the next item is questions without notice. Sorry, questions on notice from the public, and that's where, if you do ask that question, you'll be able to see your answer in 2 weeks' time. Of course, we didn't have any at the last meeting, though, so at the time the agenda was compiled, there were no questions on notice from the public. And now we move to questions without notice from councillors. Councillor Bastone and Councillor Cordova. Councillor Bastone.
Thank you, Mayor. With more people building in urban areas of Kingborough and being reliant on water tanks and water collected from their roofs, could the sealing of dirt roads be a priority where the house blocks are less than 4,000 square metres because the houses cannot be set back far enough from the road?
I think Mr Reeve, or it might have been Ms Tyler Moore, I'm not sure, or you can take it on notice if you prefer. Mr Reeve.
Through you, Mayor. So for Kingborough, we have about half our network is actually unsealed, so quite a large proportion of it. The criteria we normally look at for sealing roads is the density of the housing there, safety aspects, whether or not the maintenance costs are particularly high, traffic volumes and so forth. So there's a number of different criteria that would need to be met before we would look at actually sealing an unsealed road. The cost of sealing an unsealed road is approximately the same cost as it would cost to actually reconstruct a road, so it's actually quite an expensive exercise there. So we are looking at putting together a report to council sometime in the future there that will go through this in a little bit more detail, and we'll also look at some of the potential roads that are actually out there which we would recommend technically would be ones that could be sealed in the future there. That will actually help, I think, in terms of providing that information both to council and also to the community as well, because we do receive quite a few requests from people to seal unsealed roads.
As a supplementary question to that then, can we ensure that when you do this report you look at roads that where there are houses along them, not on 3-acre blocks or 5-acre blocks, but houses on not much larger than ordinary suburban blocks on dirt roads?
Mr. Reid.
Yeah, through you, Mayor, yes. So that's certainly one of the criteria that is looked at, and if you would have seen some of the unsealed roads that have been sealed just recently, such as Oxley's Road, they fit into that exact same criteria there, where the density of the housing is a little bit more of an urban type density as compared to a rural type density, so it's one of the considerations that's taken into account. Doesn't mean that all of those roads that fit into that category would be ideal candidates for sealing, but it's certainly one of the criteria to be used.
Thank you. My next question is, could councillors be informed as to how many roads have been sealed by the Kingborough Council that were formerly gravel or dirt roads since the council amalgamation in 1993?
Is this specifically on Bruny Island?
Not necessarily on Bruny Island, but I was at a meeting there yesterday, yes.
Got an email from the same person. Mr. E, do you want to take that on notice? Yes, we'll take that on notice.
Okay, another question from Bruny Island. When will the recycle bins be placed on Bruny Island? The concrete pads have been in place for some time, but the bins have not yet appeared.
Mr. Reeve.
Through you, Mayor, yes. So there is an order in for those, so we're just waiting for the delivery of the bins before they come in. So hopefully sometime in the next 2 to 3 weeks.
Thank you. And my last question is, with the proliferation of both Airbnb and other accommodation applications in Kingborough, are we able to make specific requirements for the buildings to have a minimum storage in their water tanks in the same manner that Hobart City Council has with its specific requirements in the Battery Point area?
Ms. Tollemore.
Through you, Mayor, the planning scheme doesn't give us the powers to deal with water tanks or potable water. The sort of mechanism you're talking about could be through a SAP, which is a specific area plan, but we would need to consider whether that will qualify under a specific area plan, and it would need to go into the new planning scheme.
But thank you.
Okay, Councillor Cordover, then Councillor Grace. Councillor Cordover.
Thank you, Mayor. This question is about rental affordability, helping renters in Kingborough. I've entitled it Caring for All Kingborough Residents. 1 in 5 Kingborough families are renting their house or their home. Rents in Kingborough have increased 30% over the last 5 years. Over that same period, wages have increased only about 10%. This represents a massive cost of living increase for 1 in 5 Kingborough families. According to Inside Airbnb, there are 270 whole houses or apartments on Airbnb. That is 80% of all short-stay dwellings on that platform in Kingborough are whole dwellings, not a private room, but entire houses and apartments. Our rates, hardship policies and commercial fee relief predominantly help property owners, not renters. Does this council have a plan for helping renters in Kingborough? Does this council have a plan to have a plan in future to help renters in Kingborough? Or are we satisfied with the status quo, where skyrocketing rental prices are pushing the cost of living higher and higher for Kingborough's rental residents?
As I responded to you last week, Councillor Cordover, a lot of what you're talking about could be dealt with inside a hardship policy, and the hardship policy the council carried only 12 months ago, less than 12 months ago, was not just for the pandemic, but over time. There are circumstances in which a property owner needs to provide assurance to council that any relief council provides will be passed on to the person who's leasing the building, but they are focused on the commercial side of things. What you could do as a constructive way forward on this is to have a look at our hardship policy and see where it could be improved, for example, and I'm sure that elected members would be happy to work with you and consider potential changes to our hardship policy in line with some of those social issues that you've raised.
Thanks, Mayor. Just one further question on that. Is it the opinion of the council that curbing short-stay accommodation, such as what's happened in Battery Point, is not ruled out? Is it still on the table?
I'm not sure what council's position is on that. Ms Tyler Moore, did you want to make a comment, or General Manager? Any officer?
Through you, Mayor, we don't have the powers to curb the use of Airbnb because most of the time it's permitted. The state government did bring in a planning directive that changed the planning scheme, meaning that most of the time it's permitted, so we don't have much control over it. The Battery Point area is different and has different provisions in it, which is a bit of a hangover from the historical planning schemes that apply in there, and they've got special provisions. But I wouldn't say that the state government would allow us to do the same.
Councillor Grace.
Mayor, regarding unsealed roads throughout our municipality, I raised this question maybe a year ago, 2 years ago, got a full report from our works department. I asked the question, what new roads, meaning that they'd never been sealed before. And in the report, correct me if I'm wrong, but it stated a lot of roads that were resealed that had already been sealed. So when we deal with this issue, and I would ask Mayor that we should have a workshop, because I was looking at the financial statement where we're now $1 million on rural roads, gravelling, because we need to look, and my question is, we definitely need to look at these roads positively, because a lot of the time it's a waste of resources. Council come along and resheet a road tonight or today, we get a thunderstorm, bang, half the sheeting's gone into some bloke's dam or in their paddocks. I think if we're going to look at these unsealed roads, I believe we should have a workshop on them and put things on the table so we can have a proper look. And the question also, can we get some other advice off some of the other councillors on their policy? It's a mouthful, but you'll get round it, Mayor, won't you?
I think your question is, can we hold a workshop on unsealed roads, and can we look at what approaches to unsealed roads from other councils? Is that correct?
Yeah, other councils. I've checked with other. Yeah, something in that order that we can look at. We can then ask questions regarding issues at a workshop where we can't hear because I'm outside the guidelines already. Because you're allowing me to discuss.
Yeah,
well, more than a question.
As always, I feel like I'm trying to give you a lot of rope to ask questions, Councillor Grace. But your question in terms of can we have a workshop on this issue, I mean, we can have a workshop on anything, but I suppose the workshop that I'd be referring you to is the budget workshop that we'll be holding in March, and there'll be a specific element to that, which is around our five-year capital works budget, and any sealing of roads needs to be funded in the five-year CapEx budget. There is some in there, but it'll be up to councillors to sit and decide what our priorities are for sealing roads and where we're going to find the money to do that.
Yes, and just the other final question was that Councillor Bastone raised was the fact we want to know how many gravel roads that's been sealed for the last 4 or 5 years that have never been sealed.
Yeah, so that question's already been asked, and we'll take that on notice. Yeah. Okay, it's Councillor Midgley and then Councillor Bastone. So just Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor, and apologies. I'm asking quite a few questions tonight. They've just come to me over the last 4 days. The first one relates to the bridge works at Margate Bridge, and I'm wondering what are these works, please?
So those works are state growth works. You're aware of those, as opposed to council works?
I did wonder, but yeah. People are asking me what they are and what's happening. Some people are getting excited by a possible cycle lane, but I don't think that's happening.
Mr. Reeve, did you want to answer that? I mean, I know it's not a council project, but...
Through you, Mayor, my understanding the bridge strengthening works there, so certainly nothing to do with the extension of the cycleway.
So people were getting excited. The next second questions relate to the removal of the trees in the car park at Sherbert Oval. How many trees have been removed from this site? What was the species or the species of the tree? How old were the trees?
Do you want to take that on notice? Or does anyone know the answer? I think we'll take it on notice.
I've got a few more as well related to that, and I'll send them to Ms. Morton. Was there an arborist report to suggest removal of this tree? Will any other trees be cut down from this site? If so, please provide details. What was the cost for the tree removal? And what is the estimated cost for any other works on this site, e.g. a possible fence or other works to be built? Thank you. The second questions relate to Browns Road regarding the footpath works on Browns Road. Is Council undertaking the footpath construction on Browns Road and were local businesses informed of the works?
Mr. Reeve.
Through you, Mayor, if there's any works happening there, it'll be maintenance work. So there's certainly a larger project that's actually we put up for submission for next financial year on Browns Road, which includes a footpath extension in that area there. So at the moment, it's only in a design phase there, so there's no money put aside for any construction works there. So I'm not quite aware of what physical works on the ground might actually be happening there, but certainly wouldn't be a capital works project.
I answered that, Mayor. I thought
it was Metro. Upgrading the path for their bus shield. Council,
thanks, Councillor Grace.
Thank you. Yes, it does look like some new footpath works there. So in regards to the bus shelter at Groningen Road intersection, I note that that also has been removed and there is, you have to catch the bus from a little turnaround bit there. I'm just wondering, will this new bus shelter be DDA compliant and is that part of the bus shelter audit upgrade?
Mr. Reeve.
Through you, Mayor, certainly any new bus stops that were put in place there would be DDA compliant. So in terms of the audit, that's more of an audit of all the existing bus stops that are actually out there to see which ones are and which ones aren't. And then I guess there's a further discussion that will be had with the various local authorities about, I guess, maintenance and management models for those ones as well.
Thank you. That was an existing bus shelter there, but it has been removed and it looks like they're building a new one. And I'm wondering, I think Mr. Reeve has possibly answered this one, but will the footpath continue further along Browns Road? And is any of this work related to the park and ride? I would suggest not, but just wondering if the footpath will be extended along Browns Road.
Through you, Mayor. So the intention is to actually provide some linkages back to the park and ride there, otherwise it becomes quite isolated. So the idea is to extend that to that point.
Thank you. Further questions relating to Roslyn Avenue. Given the Council's encouraging of traffic calming on the northern end of Roslyn Avenue, what specific measures has Council implemented since the report, I think it's been 7 months since the report was published, to calm traffic?
Mr. Reeve.
Through you, Mayor. So there was a couple of options that were talked about within that report there, which included some of the directional signage there, trying to encourage more traffic to actually use the bypass road down Algona, which has been put in place. Part of it also was a continuing monitoring, which is happening as well at the same time. So we're continuing to build up a repository of traffic counts in that area there to see if anything actually changes from what it actually is. There was some minor work on some footpaths as well at the same time, which also formed part of that original report as well. So that's also being looked at as well at the same time. There was some discussion about putting some markings of the speed limit on the road there, which we did discuss with State Growth, but they weren't necessarily in favour of that aspect of it, but that'll be something we'll continue to pursue with them as well at the same time. So there'll be continuous, so it's not a forgotten issue there, so we are continuing to monitor that area, and if anything actually changes from what was in the original report, then we'll revisit that issue as need be.
Thank you very much. Are we promoting that we've done these works? I've just had a few residents contact me wondering what has happened since the report's been published. Can we promote the works on the Facebook page or
something? As you know, we are missing a resource in communications at the moment. We do have a new communications officer starting, I think, in the first week in March.
First of March.
And so we'll be in much better position to communicate. We are doing our best, though, and I know Stevenson's stepping up to the plate with that as well, but we'll be all hands on deck on the 1st of March to communicate things like this.
Wonderful, thank you. And just a further question that's come to me is residents have spoken to me about the high number of trucks on Roslyn Avenue, thinking due to the subdivisions in Blackmans Bay and Tinderbox, wondering about... I guess there's nothing really council can do in regards to these trucks going along Roslyn Avenue. Is there any way, again, I guess those diversion signs can be put in place to divert to Algona Road, but just wondering if any thoughts or what council can do about that.
Mr. Reeve.
Through you, Mayor. Look, we're fairly limited in terms of where people can actually travel. So if you've got a road that's, you know, load limited for any legal traffic, then they're entitled to actually use those roads as well. And I guess they'll make their decisions based on convenience for them, which is also tied up with how long it'll take them to go in this direction or go in a different direction. So it's a bit difficult to control that aspect. We certainly can't enforce that they divert onto Algona Road, for example. So it's more that their choice rather than not. So we're a little bit limited in terms of that.
Councillor Watts.
Thank you, Mayor. May I have an update on the large blue gum situated on the road reservation at 59 Roslyn Avenue, Kingston Beach, that residents have requested its removal for safety reasons?
Mr. Arnold.
Through you, Mr. Mayor. Councillor Watts, only this morning we received a written request from residents in Roslyn Avenue for council to delist because the tree is on the significant tree register and therefore incorporated in the planning scheme. And I have asked council officers to put in place the appropriate process for the review under that significant tree policy, and a report will be forthcoming to council in due course.
Thank you on that, Mayor. And on that basis, can we also include the tree to the north of the main tree? The one that has the trunk into a fork?
Mr. Arnold.
Through you, Mr. Mayor. That tree is not on the significant tree register, but we will, during the course of this process, also look at that tree.
No other lights are on, so I'll take it that questions without notice.
Mr. Mayor, can I just ask one more?
If it's a question, Councillor Grace.
Yeah, question. Can Council redress the upgrading of Channel Highway? I've had a lot of people asking that Council review it in the fact that now we've got the new playground that they reckon... Lots of people think it should be like we talked about once before, pedestrian-friendly, so no road up the middle of town. I think it's pretty time that before we go out to tender that we look at that again.
So, Mr. Smee, is this you or Mr. Reeve? Mr. Smee.
Through you, Mayor, we have a program manager who is currently looking at various design options for the main street of Kingston, and we will be bringing those options to council in the near future.
Okay,
questions on notice from councillors. First one is on electric vehicles from Councillor Midgley. It's on page 3. Page 4 has a question on FOGO from Councillor Westwood. The dog owner's handbook, question from Councillor Westwood there. And the adoption of the statewide planning scheme from myself with a response there on page 4. Memorial trees at Beach Road Snug from Councillor Grace on page 5 and on page 6. Rent increases in Kingborough from Councillor Cordova. Sorry, that was on page 5. Page 6 has motions of which notice has been given, and at the time the agenda was compiled, no notices of motion have been received. Next item is petitions still being actioned. And reports on the following petitions will be submitted to Council in the near future, and they are repair or replace of collapsed road surface in Village Drive, Kingston, and the second one is the development of a walking track in Spring Farm and Whitewater Park Estate to connect Hunting Field with provision for open space and play in these areas. Next item is petitions received in the last period, and during the last period no petitions had been received. Next item is officers' reports to council, and within that, the first one is the long-term financial plan. There's a recommended motion on page 10. Would anyone like to move and second that? Moved by Councillor Westwood. Second by Councillor Fox. Councillor Westwood.
Thank you, Mayor. This agenda item relates to Council's long-term financial plan, which is a 10-year plan that underpins our decision-making when we come to looking at our annual budget. The current long-term financial plan was approved by this council close to 2 years ago now, and it linked increases in rates to increases in the long-term consumer price index. The proposal in this long-term financial plan is also to keep rates linked with increases in the long-term consumer price index. That's to reflect the fact that over the course of a year, the cost of goods and services increases in line with inflation. The long-term financial plan before us has been reviewed. It has a new section on opportunities, discusses the opportunities and the risks to council in terms of setting our budget over the next 12 months and beyond. I have one question in relation to the TAS Water dividend. I note that the dividend has been included, and I'm wondering if I could have some information on the feasibility of that dividend being paid and the estimate that it's been included at, please.
Mr. Breen.
Through you, Mayor. Essentially, I think at this stage the Taswater dividends is our best estimate of what we hope to receive. This financial year, we didn't budget for any Taswater dividend. That was on the advice they were giving us at the start of the year. We've since been informed that they are paying 25% dividend this financial year, and would like to pay another 25% if their finances prove to be acceptable. So we may end up getting 50% this year. To be a bit conservative, next year we've gone for another 50%. It still is very much unknown, but if they can produce 50% this year, I think we can be reasonably comfortable that 50% is an achievable target. From that point onwards, our expectation is that we'll go to 100%. There is some risk associated with that, and in the risk section we have detail the impact of a 50% reduction in Taswater dividends ongoing, but I think at this stage they're the best estimates that we've got, I think that hopefully that will be achieved.
Thank you. Just one other point to make about rate increases. Last year rates were indexed by 2.8% according to the long-term financial plan, but that indexation was rebated to ratepayers. My rates notice, I had a COVID-19 remission of $49.40. I think we probably missed an opportunity to communicate to the community that we had provided that remission. I'm not sure a lot of people understood that we had given them the remission. That remission is not proposed in this current financial plan, and I think that is sensible. because we now have more of an understanding about which residents and ratepayers are impacted and have been impacted by COVID, and I don't believe that a blanket remission to everyone in our municipality is appropriate this year. I certainly can go without that remission, and I think a number of other people can as well. I would much rather see us use any spare capacity we have to help those who genuinely need some help with their rates bill, and for that reason I'm pleased that we have our financial hardship policy. So I urge my colleagues to support the plan as presented.
Councillor Grace.
Just, I might be on the wrong track, but I just see this long-term plan, financial plan, as being a good indication. It is a good report comes forward, but capital works, and what are we on when we apply for grants from government to build toilets or whatever we may do? A lot of people have asked me why isn't that privatised through. It is in the capital works, but just lately I had a few phone calls about, I use Conyngham for an example. We put, what, $40,000 into the study to do the pathway on Conyngham, which was never in a financial plan. Is that right? I think that's what I was quoted about. And I'm just wondering, correct me wherever I'm wrong, but this financial plan is not only about setting rates, is it? It's about all our aspects, is it, of operations? And
so that's all right, Councillor Grace. It's not down to the budget is really where we do things like set $40,000 studies and that sort of thing. This is a long-term, it's a 10-year plan. We're required to have a long-term financial plan under the Local Government Act. So what this plan does is estimate, it sets a general direction for how much we increase our rates by, but also how much we're going to spend on our capital budget every year, and we also use this document to provide measurements of how well we're planning to maintain our assets, so what our depreciation levels are going to be, how much we're going to fund our depreciation. So it's quite high level as opposed to you know, down to individual projects. It doesn't go to that level. That's what the budget's for.
Yeah, we'll catch that through the other parts of our operations then, but it was just raised to me as a long-term financial a plan. I think more so now, Mayor, that the fact that we're spending so much money at the old school site, people are saying, well, when are we going to spend money elsewhere? Where can we look that up? And because who chooses what projects that we go to the government for grants on?
Well, in terms of that last question, we held a workshop early last year, just having a general look at some of the larger projects that we might start talking to the state government about. Some of those projects we've started talking about, and they include the extension of the share path from Margate through to Kingston, the one that already exists from Snug to Margate. We've also had conversations with elected members about the extension south of from Snug to Conyngham, and that's been primarily as a result of the advocacy of the Conyngham and Lower Snug Community Association, you'd be very, very well aware of. We've got other projects like the one that's... we've got a petition from the Spring Farm Whitewater Estate community about extending that shared path. There's also the roundabout at the Falkland Road roundabout there at Huntingfield. So there's some of the projects. But, of course, when it comes to the budget and the long-term financial plan, they don't impact the underlying position, which is what we're trying to get to as an underlying surplus.
Yeah, and they're good points, because we're talking also the community's upset about the number of parking in Margo through the middle of town, just excessive amount of parking there all day long. And the congestion through Margate and Snug, particularly through the school periods. And there's been so much works done at both schools, but nobody's been providing car parks and that sort of thing. But anyway, I'm getting off the subject. You did answer my question, but I just will keep an eye down the track when we deal with other things about that.
Yep. I think the right place for that is the five-year capital works plan at the budget time when you can
have a good look at where we're spending our money every year. There are no other lights on at the moment, which seems unusual.
Thanks very much. My first question, Mayor, is did we consult with the community about this long-term financial plan at all? For example, using our Say platform, which we already have?
No.
If not, why not?
We didn't because we do that through the budget process. As Councillor Grace's question sort of alluded to, a lot of the projects of interest for the community are around what's going in our capital works budget and also what the rate rise is going to be every year. The long-term financial plan is a much higher level document and frankly I expect that when we put if we were to go out for consultation on long-term financial plan, I'm fairly confident we wouldn't get a huge amount of input into it. What's more important is that we have a robust consultation period for our budget, which we'll do, and have longer than 4 weeks of consultation to make sure everyone gets a say in terms of what projects we're delivering and how we're setting our rates.
Do you envisage that there'll be an opportunity when this long-term financial plan is reviewed, if it is reviewed, for community participation, feedback, buy-in, any kind of opportunity for the community to have their say setting the long-term priorities of our financial project here at Kingborough?
Look, it wouldn't be something that I would be pushing for Councillor Cordova, only because I'm aware that when we do, for example, our budget consultation, we typically get between 10 and 20 submissions, and the views that we see there, we're all aware of, and I suppose it's good to refresh them every year. The long-term financial plan, I think, is much more high level, and personally, I wouldn't think it was as important as the budget when it comes to doing the consultation.
Thanks, ma'am. My next question is that in the section Kingborough Demographics, which is on page 19, the long-term financial plan acknowledges that Kingborough has a much higher overall level of population growth than the overall Tasmanian population. And we also know from our other work on council that we are seeing record month-on-month development applications and approvals in Kingborough. So we've got this enormous amount of growth. Does the long-term financial plan take a position on whether or not this growth is A, sustainable, and B, warranted, whether people want it?
Mr. Breen, I reckon you wanted the first part.
Hey, through you, Mayor. Look, essentially, as you say, the long-term financial plan does take into account the substantial growth, and so I guess there's two factors to substantial growth within the municipality. The first is that will certainly increase the amount of revenue that we're getting from rates, but that tends to be over a long period of time. What we do find is that growth, particularly when a new subdivision is put together, we tend to get an upfront cost hit on the basis of generally the assets get passed over to council once they've been completed, so we have to start maintaining those assets, we have to start depreciating those assets. So there is certainly a timing difference between the expense and the revenue. And then you tend to pick that up over time. So I think the difficulty for us is just getting that balance right. And look, I think there's a move for people to get out of the major cities and get into sort of more regional type areas. So my perspective, I think I can continue to see the growth going on for a reasonable period of time while over there's sort of land being opened up ready for development.
Thank you for that answer. My next question, Mayor, is about the rate revenue and the various levers that we have to pull in order to improve council's financial situations. Rate revenue, it says in the long-term financial plan, represents almost 70% of total income. Has the council investigated mechanisms of having tiered rates, such as Sorel, which make it so that commercial entities which can afford to pay more because they are larger net worth entities pay a different level of rates than the small mom and pop stores which have lower levels of capability to pay?
General Manager, or Mr. Breen. Mr. Breen.
Yes, through you, Mayor. Look, essentially, I think, as you indicated, Sorel is probably one of the only councils that has that very differential rating system in place. It's using information from the Valuer General, and one of the things we know is the Valuer General do not vouch for that information as being accurate, so they're certainly taking a risk in using that to differentiate their rates across various sections. We do differentiate here between residential and commercial rates. They don't pay the same rate in the dollar, and I think it's probably one exercise we could do in the future would be to do a bit more benchmarking around the state to see whether our commercial ratepayers are paying more or less than they would in other municipalities. But certainly at this stage, there's no direct plans to make any changes.
Thank you. My final question, Mayor. Developer contributions. This is under the opportunities section on page 16. It says Council believes developers should be contributing more to public infrastructure in Tasmania as they do in other states. Value capture, as it is often referred to, sees developers of large subdivisions providing cash contributions for public infrastructure requirements which stem from their project. That's the only real detail in the long-term financial plan about value capture and further development contributions. Are you able to unpack that and give any inference as to what that means, what that might look like, and how come there isn't more detail in the financial plan about it?
The reason, but the GM might want to add if I miss it, is there's a notice of motion on the books, I think it was from Councillor Westwood, about this issue, and the notice of motion asked for a report into value capture options, and I know when Ms Stevenson came on board from LGAT, that LGAT's been doing some work in this area as well, so I think it's generally pretty broad because Council hasn't yet adopted an exact position and nor has the sector, but we have, through that motion, in principle said we'd like to investigate ways to get value capture, and that's why it's listed as an opportunity.
Thanks, Mayor. I think it could be a huge opportunity. So my next question is, because it might fundamentally shift the revenue that we can get really quite significantly, potentially, why then are we looking at the long-term financial plan now? Why didn't we postpone the long-term financial plan until after we had this brand new lever of being able to charge large subdivisions more?
I think you said it best when you said our rate revenue is 70% of our total revenue, and so even if we were to secure changes to developer contributions, I mean, it's still going to be a small amount of revenue, and let's face it, things are going to change from between now and even our next budget. The long-term financial plan, even though it's a 10-year plan, it's going to change. It'll need to be reviewed well before 10 years. So my personal view about us doing this review at this time is that it's good to do a regular review of the long-term financial plan. It has been, I think it's been longer than 2 years since it was updated. And for that reason, given the fact we've had a global pandemic, we've actually deviated from our long-term financial plan, our budget last year, by providing the remission. For all those reasons, it was important that we updated ourselves in terms of our long-term trajectory to get back to an underlying surplus. So that's why I think it was important to bring it back.
Thanks, Mayor. That's great. I've got a few amendments that I'd like to try and test. Do you want me to wait for a bit to hear some contributions?
Well, it's up to you because there's no other lights on. But if Councillor Cordova is going to move amendments, does anyone want to make a substantive contribution now, or would you rather hear Councillor? No one else seems that. Councillor Reid, and then it will come back for some amendments. Councillor Reid.
Thank you, Mayor. Firstly, I just wanted to thank the staff who have put this report together because I thought it was a really comprehensive snapshot of our municipality, and particularly I thought it was important that we note in there some of the demographic information that had been taken from census data, which I think for some people might be surprising to know that we do have a relatively high median household income of $1,364 per household compared to $1,100 Tasmania-wide. We do have a lower unemployment rate than the state average. Our unemployment rate in the municipality is 5% compared to 7%. We have higher qualifications in the municipality than others. And, of course, as we've already noted tonight, we are one of the fastest and continue to be one of the fastest growing municipalities in Tasmania. So we do have some significant advantages in many respects. Having said that, we do also know that there are pockets of disadvantage within our community. And so I do think that it's important that we are able to target our assistance in the most appropriate way. I support the long-term financial plan as it is printed here. I believe that we do have to not continue on with the rates rebates that we had for the last budget, and that's what is consistent with what is printed in this plan. However, I think there's also an opportunity within this to make sure that we are targeting hardship provisions appropriately, and so I would also like to propose an amendment that, as well as adopting the long-term financial plan, that we review our financial hardship policy as part of the 2021-22 budget deliberations. So if the mover and seconder of the motion are happy with that, I would propose that amendment, and I can give the words to Ms Morton.
So the question is from Councillor Reid is whether we're happy to add adopt the long-term financial plan and review the hardship policy before the 21-22 budget. Would you be happy with that, Councillor Westwood?
I'm happy with that.
Councillor Fox?
Yes.
Yep. Just wait to get the...
Yeah, so just to be clear, it's the financial hardship policy.
Financial hardship.
Yep. As part of the 2021-22 budget deliberations.
It's 21-22, sorry, Ms Morton. Okay, happy? Councillor Wood.
Thank you, yeah.
Happy?
Yep.
Happy no. Mover and seconder? Nodding?
Yep.
Okay.
So I think that, having said that, I think we also do need to acknowledge what this document has said, and that is that there are individuals and businesses and organisations within the community who have done it tough during the pandemic, but council has too. And this document shows that, unfortunately, you know, we've had a hit on our revenue with rates remissions, the Tazwater dividend we've already spoken about this evening, and we've lost revenue from hiring of various facilities. So, you know, we do have some challenges that we need to face as an organisation as well. But I do believe that the financial plan that we have before us will set us up for future opportunities. And I certainly think that on page 28, the table of cash versus borrowing shows this well, that from 24-25 onwards that we will have greater opportunity to have additional cash available to council. And that, to me, you know, whilst we would like to see it sooner, it is also very exciting that that will be the case, because that's when, as an opportunity, as councillors, for those of us who are still around this table, we will have the chance to look at initiatives that can really benefit our community, not just in capital works, but in other areas such as community development and the arts and the environment and so on. So I think this plan should be embraced for what it is, and that is one that is financially responsible, but also gives us some great hope for the future, and I'm happy to endorse it.
Thanks, Councillor Reid. Are there any other speakers before Councillor Cordova moves his amendment? Councillor Cordova.
Thanks, Mayor. The first amendment that I'd like is to add a clause that we will review the long-term financial plan every 2 years. So I'm hoping, because it's not controversial,
yep,
to ask the mover and seconder, if we could add a communications, consultation and review section. Looking at the table of contents, that's probably the best place to add it. It's just a whole new section that simply says council will review the LTFP every 2 years, and council will provide, as a second clause, council will provide opportunities for community feedback and suggestions during this review process. And I've emailed that to Amanda and you.
Have you got it, Ms Morton? Oh.
I can just read it out loud.
Ms Morton's problem is, yeah. Okay. So we wanted the amendment just to say, so what about in the motion it says budget deliberations and then with amendments, colon. Okay. After the word deliberations, though, could we put with amendments? and then a coal, and then we sort of list what they are. So the first one would be inserting a two-year review clause. Do you just want to put the whole amendment up together?
Yeah, I'll just walk over there and show it to Andy. Is that all right? Yeah. Let me read it too. Council will review the LTFP every 2 years. And then a second sentence, that council will provide opportunities for community feedback and suggestions during this review process. And I'm happy to take them one at a time if...
I think you just put them all up together and, yeah, and then we'll see how we go. Okay. Just keep reading them out.
I'll keep, I think, so yeah, more of
we've
them.
Got yep. a, we've got an audience. So
great, okay. So the next one is under the opportunities section on page 16, I'd like to add a heading called Solar on KSP and Community Halls. And that heading would read, Council sees opportunities for energy cost savings from installing solar PV systems on buildings in the Kingborough Sports Precinct and, where appropriate, community halls throughout the municipality. So that's underneath opportunities, and that's about solar. The next clause...
Oh, sorry. Okay. Okay, whatever you think. Yep, sounds good. All right.
And so that's just under the opportunity section, so it's not yep. a commitment, it's just alongside charitable rates, developer contributions, waste management, it's just another one that would be solar, it's an opportunity.
So why don't you talk to your amendment, and then by the time you finish your contribution, hopefully Ms. Morton will update and we'll have it on the screen and we can kind of go to debate on that. But do we have a... Or have you said your whole amendments so far?
No, not all of them. I think that there's a non-controversial amendment.
Just before you debate it, we just need a seconder, that's all. So
yeah, of course, yeah.
So do you want to finish saying what your amendment is? And then
do you want all of them? I'm confused. Do you want all of them?
Yep.
Okay. We're going to need to deal with them separately. Some are more controversial than others. So the one about time review...
Okay.
A review is. It should just be the mover and seconder to say, yeah, we want to look at it again in 2 years.
So all I want to do is get it through the, is deal with it as quickly and efficiently as possible. Yep. Does anyone have a contrary view that we should deal with it individually? Councillor Fox, the most experienced councillor here.
Individually, we should deal with them individually, definitely. And we all show.
All right. With that, in that case, let's. So the first amendment is we'll review it every 2 years. Seconded by Councillor Midgley. Do you want any contribution to that? I don't think you get it much. No. Okay, so the amendment...
Well, I could just say, I mean, clearly I'd like to also ask the Chief Financial Officer to comment, but I'm very happy to separate those two things, meaning that if we are comfortable just for Council to review it every 2 years, fine. But also, I wanted to throw into the mix that I think the community... would probably like some buy-in.
The problem is that I've just taken your amendment, the first one, and then had it seconded, so now we're debating just whether the council will review the long-term financial plan every 2 years. Did you want to ask Mr Breen for a comment on that?
Yes, please.
Mr Breen.
Through you, Mayor. Essentially, I guess our plan is to do the long-term financial plan every year. The reason we didn't do it last financial year was because of the pandemic impacts, and it took us a while to really get a feel for that. So our intention is always to do it annually as part of the budget process.
Can I suggest that, because it's not explicitly in the policy, so that's why Councillor Cordova didn't pick it up. Perhaps if someone could suggest to the mover and seconder that Council will review the long every year instead of 2 years, and then...
I thought that was our policy.
Yeah, it's not explicit in the document, that's all.
Okay.
So it could be, though.
We've always done it every, as long as we've had a long-term financial plan, except for last year, I think.
Not quite, but...
We all haven't always had a long-term
If it's explicit, we definitely
plan.
Will. So does someone want to suggest, perhaps Councillor Westwood, you could suggest to the mover and seconder that they amend the amendment to every year instead of every 2 years?
I could suggest that,
but
I'm not sure if it's appropriate for me to pipe in at this juncture. As the mover of the motion, I'm not happy...
We're on the amendment, though, so So the amendment is just asking, the first, just Amendment 1, which is Council will review the long-term financial plan every 2 years. Okay. Someone be helpful.
I will.
Thanks, Councillor Bastone.
Can we change Amendment 1 to the Council will review the long-term financial every year? Long-term financial plan every year.
The mover and second would be happy with that.
Thanks. Yes, that'd be great.
Thank you. Thanks, Councillor Fox. And Councillor Midgley would as well. Thank you, Councillor Bastone. Okay. So we want any more conversation on that, or do we want to vote on that amendment? Happy. So the amendment is the Council review the long-term financial plan every year. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Those against?
No.
I have a division. All those in favour, please raise your hand. Councillor Gray, Street, Bastone, Reet, Westwood, Fox, Cordover, Midgley and Winter, and those against Councillor Wass. The amendment is carried. Councillor Cordover on his second amendment, which is Council will provide opportunities for community feedback and suggestions during this process. Need a seconder, please. Councillor Midgley, would you like to speak to it, Councillor Cordover?
Only to say that people do get a chance to speak to the budget, to feed into the budget process, and this long-term financial plan sets the priorities for that budgeting. So I think the community will want a say in that as well, and that's why I put this up.
Any further speakers to the amendment? Councillor Westwood.
I guess in principle I support going out for community feedback and suggestion every time we do the long-term financial plan, but I'm uncomfortable about having to make these calls right here and now, and I don't want to sit here and have to make decisions on the hop for every single amendment you've got. I don't know how many you've got. I don't know if this is standard practice. I have not encountered this before, but I don't want to review a document without input from staff on 10 different amendments.
Four
different amendments, and be asked to make a decision. So in regards to the community feedback, I support it in principle, but given resource constraints, given competing priorities, I'm not sure that I want to actually have something that dictates we have to do it, because we have improved our budget consultative process quite substantially, and it is an opportunity for the community to provide their views. Happy to be persuaded otherwise.
Further contributions on this? Now the light's on. Councillor Midgley, sorry. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor, and thank you, Councillor Westwood, for that. I think it's about the community understanding what the financial plan is and then the budget. It just seems such they're together, but they're separate, and then, yeah, it'd be great, I think, to have the community involvement around the financial plan, so that's why I do second this, and I'm happy to hear from staff in regards to why perhaps we do not and how we possibly could.
Mr. Breen?
Yeah, through you, Mayor. One of the issues I could see in regards to the community consultation would be it would start delaying the process. As you recall, we had the budget workshop a couple of weeks ago. We would then have to put the plan together, go to council, and then my understanding is then there would be consultation around the plan before it's approved by council. Then we've got to start, obviously we have the budget process underway then, which would sort of delay that document being prepared and therefore reduce the amount of time we'd have for the budget process consultation. So it's just a bit of a timing issue is what I could see in regards to making sure we get the two lots of consultation done in a relatively short period of time.
For my contribution, I won't be offended if this amendment passes, but the long-term financial plan isn't a particularly... I think we're really going to struggle to get a lot of feedback on the long-term financial plan as a document. It's not particularly exciting. The budget is much more interesting because it has the actual projects that we're going to deliver, the actual level of rates that we're going to charge, the level of the services that we're going to provide, the programs, the projects, and that's the document that we should focus on when it comes to engagement. That's why I think, as I said, I won't be offended, but I will say I told you so when we don't get much feedback. To sum up, Councillor Cordover,
Okay. So the amendment is council will provide opportunities for community feedback and suggestions during this process. It was moved by Councillor Cordover, seconded by Councillor Midgley. All those in favour, please say aye. Those against?
No.
Over division. All those in favour, please raise your hand. Councillor Reet, Westwood, Cordover and Midgley. Those against is Councillor Grace, Street, Bastone, Fox, Wass and Winter. The amendment is lost. Now move to the third amendment.
Thanks very much. The third one is now under opportunities, which is on page 16. And so I'm recommending that underneath where it says developer contributions currently, we add in a new section that is called solar, and it reads, council sees opportunities for energy cost savings from installing solar PV systems on buildings in the Kingborough Sports Precinct and, where appropriate, community halls throughout the municipality.
Yep, looking for a seconder. Councillor Midgley, would you like to speak to it, Councillor Cordova?
Very briefly, we've had a workshop and I think this has been a thing that's appeared on many iterations of various budgets and it's always failed so far. I think 5 years in a row now, it's been put up by our council staff saying we'd save a huge amount of money in energy costs and it's also great climate action. There's a whole number of reasons why you do it. It's smart finance to begin with. And there's also an enormous community appetite for it. So I thought just by naming it up in the opportunities, we're not committing to it now, we're not putting a number next to it saying we're going to set aside X amount of money for it. We're just saying that over the next 10 years, we've named this up, the council staff have told us it's a good idea, we're going to progress it. Thanks.
Comments? Councillor Westwood.
Could staff please provide some comment about this opportunity? Is it an opportunity and what are the trade-offs, and could we please have some more information on how it might feed into the budget decision-making process?
Mr. Reeve.
Through you, Mayor. Yeah, so you're right, this particular project has been sitting around for a little while, and I guess the dollars associated with it, a lot of it's about opportunity costs for those dollars as well and what else it can actually be used for. The particular project for the sports centre is about trying to match some of the power requirements that may be at the sports centre. Well, there's been a couple of bids that have gone up. One that was talking about actually feeding some power back into the grid, but this latest one was more about matching the requirements of the power there. That's not the case for every single hall that is actually out there which have less use. So it's not actually cost-effective for every building, but it's certainly cost-effective for some buildings. They do get considered through the budget process, so that bid has been put forward again for next financial year and will get discussed at our upcoming budget workshop. So there's certainly the opportunity there to discuss that and put forward any views on that side of things. But it's not one-size-fits-all, though.
Thank you.
Okay, Councillor Reece turned a light off, so Councillor Street.
Thank you, Mayor. Look, I accept what Councillor Cordover has said, and I pass no judgment at this point on whether the opportunity that you raise is a good one or not. I just don't think it fits within the long-term financial plan as a document. I think the opportunities that we're talking about in the long-term financial plan are revenue opportunities. They're not project opportunities. I think the time for discussion of project opportunities is during the budget process, when there is full community consultation, when we can weigh it against other competing priorities as well, and I think that's the most appropriate way to do it, rather than, and I know that you're saying we're only naming it up as an opportunity, but I think you know full well that if it goes into the long-term financial plan, it puts it on a pedestal ahead of other competing priorities, and I don't think that the long-term financial plan is the vehicle to do that. I think it's a discussion to be had at budget time, as I say, when we do have all of that community consultation available to us and the time and resources of staff to make decisions about competing priorities.
Councillor Fox.
I was going to say what he said.
Okay. Sounds like there's broad support for... I thought during the budget workshop last year, and this might be Councillor Cordova's frustration, was that we agreed to fund the solar installation at the sports centre, and I sort of feel like we maybe
maybe we did and just it sort of popped out at the end, but hearing there is very strong support for this project, but maybe it's not for it to be a long-term financial plan. Councillor Grace. Sorry,
just for an example, just the last few weeks at progress meetings I've been to, they're getting away from the solo issue. They're more talking about generators, so I think this doesn't fit in. It needs to be a discussion outside this financial plan.
Thanks, Councillor Grace. When you say that what you're about to say is not in line with the topic of what we're talking about, it makes it very hard for me to let you keep talking. Okay. To sum up, Councillor Cordova.
Thanks, Mayor. It's just saying that it is an opportunity, and I take respectfully disagree with Councillor Street's point. It is an opportunity. It would save a huge amount of money because there's 17 different community halls and it's this enormous precinct. And it's not saying we're going to do it next year. It means between now and 2031, it is a good opportunity. It should be named up in the plan.
Okay. So now the amendment as moved by Councillor Cordova and seconded by Councillor Minchley relates to solar on the Kingborough Sports Centre and Community Halls. All those in favour, please say aye. Those against?
Aye.
I have a division. All those in favour, please raise your hand. Councillor Cordova and Minchley, and those against is Councillors Grace, Street, Bastone, Reet, Westwood, Fox, Wass and Winter. The amendment is lost, and the last amendment from Councillor Cordova. Oh, sorry.
Good try.
Oh, those first two were one. Yes, sorry.
Yep, so now there's the next one underneath opportunities is to insert a new section called Biodiversity Offset Revenue Opportunities, which reads, there may be an opportunity to increase revenue for the Kingborough Environmental Fund by reviewing the biodiversity policy against alternative tree valuation frameworks such as the City of Melbourne tree valuation method.
Seconded by Councillor Bastone. Variety's the spice of life.
Thanks, Cordova. That's kind of you and very kind of Councillor Bastone. Really appreciate it. This is, going to Councillor Street's point from the previous thing, this is exactly a revenue method. So what I'm talking about here is right now we get $250 per high conservation value tree and $500 per very high conservation value tree. It's not benchmarked against CPI. It doesn't go up every year like every other fee in charge. Whereas meanwhile, in the City of Melbourne, as an example, they value their trees in a much more appropriate way. And as a result, from their subdivisions and their developments, they're getting inordinate amounts of revenue. And it's changing the face of many a suburb in Melbourne. So we should be exploring this. It's an enormous opportunity. We've already got $700,000 in the Environmental Fund, and that could be $7 million if we would just review our tree valuation tool. Thanks.
Councillor Street.
Councillor Cordova, with all due respect, if you want to have a discussion about the biodiversity offset policy, then let's have a discussion about the biodiversity offset policy and have a discussion about it properly rather than trying to shift it into the long-term financial plan where I don't think it belongs. I think it's an important topic, but I think it's an important topic to be discussed on its own, and I'm simply not going to vote for an amendment off the back of a 10-minute debate on the topic that inserts it into a long-term financial plan that creates an expectation that we are going to do something about it without having appropriately assessed the matter.
I don't need to add much more because I can't see what it's doing on here at this moment.
Look, I have a bit more sympathy for this than Councillor Street and Councillor Grace in that I think Councillor Cordova's made a good point in that whilst our other charges go up with CPI that I think you mentioned in a debate another time that that have been stagnant for a long period of time, 10 years or so. But he, in his motion, he doesn't just talk about increasing it. He talks about an opportunity for reviewing the way that we do this, and I actually think that would be a good plan to review the way that we do this because I think there's been a lot of occasions where a single tree is worth an enormous amount of money to a developer and given that they could provide a greater contribution than the simple $500. But I do take Councillor Street's point as well, but I don't think this is going to force a policy change. It's just saying that there is an opportunity to review it. So I don't think we're being asked to endorse a policy. You're just pointing out that given the
$700,000 that's gone into biodiversity offset over the last 10 years or so, that is actually quite a significant revenue stream, and it could be considered for review. So I'm not offended either way, but I think it is a relevant opportunity for revenue. Are there any other contributions? No, Councillor Cordova, sum up.
Thank you, Mayor, and you said it exactly right, that this is an enormous opportunity. It's another lever. You know, if the general rates are one lever, we keep sticking it to the ratepayers of this community, and yet there's been time and time again this enormous pool of revenue that's waiting to be looked at, and it's a long-term vehicle for revenue, and if you're not going to put it here, where else does it go? So it would be an enormous missed opportunity to not name up changes to the biodiversity policy here. It's an area we should be exploring.
Okay, so the motion, the amendment was moved by Councillor Cordova, seconded by Councillor Bastone, and it relates to developer contributions called the biodiversity offset and talks about it being added as an opportunity in the long-term financial plan. All those in favour, please say aye. Those against? We'll have a division. All those in favour, please raise your hand. Councillors Bastone, Reet, Cordova, Midgley and Winter. Those against, Councillor Grace, Street, Westwood. Councillor Fox, I didn't pick you up as a vote. Loss. Sorry? All right, I'm going to start again. All those in favour, please raise your hand. Councillor Bastone, Reet, Fox, Cordova, Midgley and Winter, and those against is Councillors Grace, Street, Westwood and Woss. The amendment is carried. Next amendment from Councillor Cordova.
Thanks, Mayor. This one is to insert, also under opportunities, Council plans to set waste reduction and minimisation targets informed by a review of the waste management strategy in order to save money, reduce Council's carbon emissions and promote climate action.
Can I go back? Can I just ask,
hang on a sec. I haven't
did
got
you
a sec.
Vote on that last one?
Yeah, I did.
I'm sorry, I didn't.
Yep. But Councillor Cordova has just moved an amendment. I need a seconder for the amendment. Councillor Midgley, Councillor Cordova is going to speak to his amendment.
Thanks. In the climate report that we got from an independent climate accountant, there was up to $26 million in savings that were available to be made. 92% of Kingborough's carbon emissions are coming from waste, 92%. So probably the single biggest way we could save money, reduce carbon, Council's carbon emissions and promote climate action, the single biggest way is to have a sensible approach to waste minimisation, and the way to do that is through waste minimisation targets and checking up what we're doing currently against our waste management strategy. Like, have we implemented since December 2017 when we had the waste management strategy delivered to us? Have we done any of that? Have we done half of it? Have we done, you know, we don't know yet. And so a huge, enormous way over the next 10 years, looking forward to 2030-31, that financial year, probably the single biggest way we could save money is to figure out what we're doing with waste. So it's an opportunity. It should go in the plan. Thanks.
Councillor Westwood.
Thank you, Mayor. I don't support this amendment on principle, which is why I didn't support the previous amendment. We had a workshop on the long-term financial plan, and that is councillors' opportunity to provide staff with suggestions like this. It is not fair of you to bring these amendments to the table tonight in a public council meeting and put us on the spot and try and get us to make decisions about what we do and don't include in a long-term financial plan when we can't have a full opportunity to explain to people who are watching from home why we have and haven't voted a certain way. I don't like... So I object to this on a matter of principle, and I think I can't call you on a point of order because I've had a look and I can't find one that fits, so apparently you can actually do what you're doing, but I don't like the precedent and I would really appreciate if you didn't do it in future.
Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. I support the principles of the amendment that Councillor Cordova is putting forward. I understand we have a workshop. We talked to council staff and I did attend a couple of meetings with Councillor Cordova and then reading the long-term financial plan, which we received last week. I think sometimes we sort of chew over and have a think about it, and I think pulling all of that together, Councillor Cordova has looked at this as opportunities and missed opportunities. And when you look across different other councils' long-term financial plans, we all do things differently. I mean, the City of Melbourne has a participation thing for their long-term financial plan. Like, everybody does long-term financial plans differently. Councillor Cordova, I think it's one of his first long-term financial plans that he's sat on. So he is exploring different opportunities, looking around at some information gathering and things like that. So it is really interesting to hear his point of views and to see what he is proposing and putting forward after he's mulled over quite a lengthy document. So I'm happy to support what he's coming forward with. And I think the principles around it is that sticky situation of having the long-term financial plan setting in for 10 years, knowing that we can review it in a year, but yet there's principles that we stood as councillors that we'd like to see happen while we are here. And I guess he's bringing forward some of those principles to look at how we can embed that and how we can ensure that when we are making these budget decisions, that these principles and ideas and things that we are here for are somehow fitted in the long-term financial plan. I can understand some of the councillors' frustrations. It's not how we do it, and we are a bit off the cuff, and it probably would have been better to give a bit more notice. But as we know, that's just sometimes how it is. And yeah, perhaps next time could encourage to bring a bit more notice. But I think I encourage that he has put this forward for discussion.
Councillor Reet.
Thank you. I just wanted to echo Councillor Woodward's concern. Westwood's concerns, I just changed your name, sorry about that, Councillor Westwood's concerns about the processes with this, because I think we run the risk of confusing not only the community but ourselves by enshrining a lot of principles / opportunities within the long-term financial plan when we are also guided by our strategic plan and our operational plan and business plans, and we have budget deliberations as well. So if we start having too many potentially conflicting statements or bits and pieces here and bits and pieces there, then we could set ourselves up for failure in producing a final budget when we've got all these different locations for things that we are supposedly trying to commit to. I would like to see us keep these sorts of things enshrined in our strategic plan as the place where we then refer to in making our decisions around the budget. I think the long-term financial plan for me is more about the actual, I guess, the economics of keeping council running and the financial situation and things like, our underlying deficits and where we want to be and how soon we want to get there. I think that things like principles would be more suitable to be enshrined in our strategic plan that we do every 5 years. I think this could become very confusing otherwise, to be drawing bits and pieces from various documents. I think it's a great intention, but I just think perhaps it could be better placed within our strategic plan.
Councillor Grace.
Correct me if I'm right or wrong, but we had our waste management strategy put before us not that long ago by Mr. Doole, if I stand corrected.
A while ago now, but yeah.
We did, and we poo-pooed it. There was comments made on that that I thought was a bit not appropriate to have said at a council meeting, but they were said about, it was a poor report, if I remember right, and to go back and have a look at the tape, etc., and the costing wasn't sufficient, if I remember rightly. And I raised the question then, and I still raise it. I think Councillor Cordova's right there, in the fact that I know he supported it. And we do need to know what are we doing with our waste and what are we doing to improve it. And poor old Mr. Doole, I think he was a bit upset with us when he went to so much trouble putting such a Well, I thought the report was fairly good in the terms of what he was trying to outline as a strategy. Anyway, that's my two bobs worth, so I think we should go back maybe too and have a look at that strategy before us again and correct some of the things, because of all it needed, it was that meeting, was a amendment to some of the figures if we weren't happy with. I think the policy was okay.
Okay, are there any other contributions? I'm really glad that we've got waste management in as an opportunity, because it wasn't previously listed as a waste management as an opportunity in previous long-term financial plans. So I think that's important. But it is only a brief outline. Having said that, I'd be happier with it if it talked about the long-term financial aspects rather than the carbon emissions and climate action, because even though I know Councillor Cordova and vastly different views on this, I'm not sure it would probably, those issues belong here, so I'm a bit on the fence on it. But I guess to go to Councillor Westwood's point, I do get the frustration of having things thrown at you at a meeting, but I also think it's probably unreasonable that Councillor Cordova could have raised these in the workshop, because if it was really, we're talking about the options that we spent the hour and a half talking about, the amount, how soon we wanted to get to a surplus, what the rate rise would look like. And I don't think we actually put up what the potential opportunities and risks might be, added or deleted. So I sort of see both sides on that as well. Councillor Gore, over sum up.
Thanks, Mayor. And again, you put it quite rightly that essentially here, we're not changing the plan, we're just adding to the list of options, and there was no other opportunity at which to add to the list of opportunities. But importantly, all of the councillors around this table have been to the climate workshop, the budget workshop, the community halls workshop. We've met with the CFO and the GM. I've talked to the mayor, I've talked to the deputy mayor. And really, I can't be held personally accountable for other councillors not doing their homework when it comes to this. We are looking here at waste management. It's an important thing. It's a huge opportunity. And it could actually serve great dividends to the community over the next 10 years. We don't have to fix everything all in one go, but what we can do, it says right here in the executive summary that it's our strategic plan, key priority to sustain the natural environment whilst facilitating development for our future. That's why we have a long-term financial plan, is to speak to those key priorities. And so adding to this list of opportunities by mentioning waste, I think is really pertinent, it's relevant. I think it'll serve the community well, and that's why I put it up.
Okay, the amendment moved by Councillor Cordova and seconded by Councillor Midgley talks about council adding underneath the waste management part of the plan. Council plans to set waste reduction and minimisation targets, etc., and they're on the screen. All those in favour of that amendment, please say aye. Those against?
No.
Have a vision. All those in favour, please raise your hand. Councillor Grace, Cordova and Midgley. And those against? Councillor Street, Bastone, Reid, Westwood, Fox, Wass and Winter. The amendment is lost. Councillor Cordova, I don't think you've actually made a substantial contribution yet.
I've got one more amendment under user charges and statutory fees.
Okay, sure.
So under amend paragraph 2 of user charges and fees, that's on page 23, and I would like to amend it to read, after the line where it says statutory fees and fines relate mainly to those levied in accordance with legislative requirements, these include building fees, planning fees, health related fees, parking fines and animal registrations, after that sentence I would like to add, where possible, council aims to increase development fees such as planning, development, subdivision, engineering, building and plumbing fees instead of non-development related fees such as pet registration, sports centre fees or hall hire charges.
Second up. It's about to lapse for want of a second up.
Nobody wants to hear why.
It lapsed.
Alas. Oh well.
Substantial contribution? I think you've made one yet.
Thanks very much, Mayor. This is an opportunity to be ambitious, to be inspirational, to set our priorities for the next 10 years. A couple of points that I'd raise are that we probably do require some community consultation around why we make the decisions we do. For example, I think we could have better discussed the rates, the general rate increase, because in the budget rates and information brochure, it says freezing rates, the effective general rate rise, this is for 2019-20, is 0%. Ratepayers will see a rise of 2.8% in the general rate, but will receive a COVID-19 rebate to offset that increase. And now we're talking about a removal of the remission. So what I'm trying to get at is we need to be much more clear about when we freeze people's rates and then plan to take back that freeze. That would be a delay, a pause, a moratorium. It would not be a remission. The word remission means, according to the Macquarie Dictionary, the relinquishment of a payment. The Oxford Dictionary says it's the release from an obligation of a debt or payment, and Google Dictionary says it is the cancellation of a debt, charge or penalty. So my concern, comms-wise, is that we've told everyone in the community with this term, rates remission, we've told everyone you don't have to pay 2019-20's rates. And now we're telling everybody, according to the long-term financial plan, by the way, it was just a moratorium. It was a delay, a freeze, a postponement, a pause. It was not a remission. So I think we need to work on our language. I found it difficult trying to explain to people that, we're going to have to pay back. We're going to have to pay back what we paused. We did not market it that way. We marketed it as a rates freeze. But then we directly called it a remission. So, look, easily confusable. I think something else that I wanted to raise is that on Council's OurSay website, it says that Council will engage on projects or issues of community interest when an outcome has the potential to have a considerable impact on the community or a stakeholder group, when there's a strategic opportunity to involve the community in decisions relating to the nature, scope, design or delivery of a project or initiative, and when an outcome involves a change in services or infrastructure provided by council. And I think the long-term financial plan is pretty much hits every one of those points in terms of how it affects the community, and so that's why I strongly take the opinion that we really do need to talk to the community about this, ask for community buy-in. And whilst I take the Mayor's point that maybe you won't get many written submissions, I think there's 1.5 million ways to engage with people that aren't asking for written submission. For example, every time, like we did this with Huntingfield, having, little community town hall meetings where people can come along and look at what it means to them, get a bit of a masterclass or a workshop in what the long-term financial plan is for, and then be able to, in an informal way, give their feedback and input. They don't need to write a 10,000-page essay. They just need to come along to a town hall meeting and have their say. So I think we can do better with consultation. The reason why we're looking at the long-term financial plan now is because of post-COVID, there's been some enormous, significant changes to council's finances. And the community of Kimber has changed as well, and we need to be asking the community about what those changes mean for them and how they want our priorities reflected as a council. So those are some of my points, and I think it's important that we've added in the biodiversity amendment, I'm glad that that's happened. I would have liked to see the other amendments get up, but c'est la vie. Back to you. Thanks, Mayor.
Okay, so just to remind people, what I've got has happened so far in the substantive debate is Councillor Westwood moved, Councillor Gray spoke second, and Councillor Cordova has now spoken third. Would anyone else on their substantive contribution like to speak on the long-term financial plan? So for my contribution, I think I've read a lot of long-term financial plans around the place. I've seen long-term financial plan, this is no word of a lie, that for one council in Tasmania, which was an Excel spreadsheet which just listed 10 things and just had the numbers going up by a few percent every year, and they called it a long-term financial plan, and everything in between. And I think you get to ours, which is very comprehensive and very professionally put together, and actually mimics in a lot of ways the state budget and the way that that's put forward in terms of the opportunities and the risks
and the strategic actions. The strategic actions are really important, and they're about delivering an underlying surplus which is incrementally increasing to 2% of revenue, and that's the progress has gone backwards, and it's gone backwards because of COVID-19, but we are still planning to get to that position of having a 2.1% underlying surplus, which is 2.1% of revenue by 26-27. It also talks about asset renewal being at a rate of 90% or higher, and that's really important. The Auditor General is very keen for councils to have at least that level, and what it means is that we are maintaining our assets and keeping them in good condition, and that's been something we haven't been able to do in terms of funding at that level for a long period of time, and in fact in some years we've been down to sort of 70%. So that's on page 15. There's also some, I think, good benchmarking for us to be found further down in the report, particularly around the key financial indicators, so the underlying surplus ratio. Again, that's one of the measurements that council is measured against its other colleagues by the Tasmanian Audit Office annual report, and it shows at the moment, well, look, a lot of councils are going to be in a similar position, that we've got an underlying surplus ratio which is quite low, or lower than we'd like it, but by 2025 we're up to 1.21%, and by 2031, if we stick to this plan, we'll have a very healthy underlying surplus ratio, which allows us to do things like employ more people, maintain our assets better, and run a really good organisation. So this report, if you're looking for a single document that outlines where we're at financially, it's a very, very good one. And I hope that it's supported tonight, because I think it gives us a good roadmap to getting council to fully recover from COVID-19, continue to build all the assets and infrastructure that our community needs. Sum up, Councillor Westwood.
Thank you, Mayor. I think Councillor Reet summed it up pretty well when she said this is about our economic and financial management. To paraphrase you, Councillor Reet, this is a really sensible pathway forward. We still are in times that are quite uncertain. So far, touch wood, we have weathered the storm reasonably well. We certainly have made some sacrifices along the way and done as an organisation what we could do in being agile in responding to the impact of COVID, but we must be aware that things can change very rapidly. So I think what we have before us is a responsible long-term financial plan, given all the information we have, and I ask my colleagues to support it.
Okay, so the motion, have you got the full motion? So just to clarify what we have and haven't done, the motion has been amended from what was in the original, and that is that council adopt the long-term financial plan, but then we also added, through agreement of the mover and seconder, and review the financial hardship policy before the 21-22 budget deliberations with the following amendments, and those amendments were that council will review the long-term financial plan every year. And were the other amendments? The trees, yes. And no, I think it's the next one. And a new section under developer contributions called biodiversity offset revenues, there may be an opportunity to increase revenue for the Kingborough Environmental Fund by reviewing the biodiversity offset policy against alternative tree valuation frameworks, such as the City of Melbourne tree valuation method. All those in favour, please say aye. Those against? We'll have a division. All those in favour, please raise your hand. Councillor Grace, Street, Bastone, Reet, Westwood, Fox, Midgley, Wass and Winter. Those against, Councillor Cordova. The motion is carried. Next item is the Local Government Association Tasmania General Meeting. Now, it is 7 o'clock. We are probably in for a long one. Okay? We'll do another one and then we'll see how we're going after that. So the Local Government Association Tasmania General Meeting, for those playing along at home, it's on page 40. And in this motion, basically what we're doing is asking the councillors to direct me how to vote at the LGAT meeting, which is to be held next month. How do we want to do this? The motion reads... Oh, it's up on the screen. The council advised the mayor regarding voting at the upcoming LGAT general meeting as follows. Do we want to move to discuss someone so we can do this? Move to discuss from Councillor Midgley, seconded by Councillor Westwood. All those in favour, please say aye. Those against? Motion carried. So do we want to talk about planning authorities first? Any passionate views for or against? At the moment, my plan would be no, but does anyone want to speak passionately for it to start with? Councillor Fox.
As one of the fastest growing municipalities, and I think we have so many planning decisions coming before us, a lot of the criteria they suggest, I mean, we'd end up handing a lot of responsibility to someone who hasn't got the experience that we have. And hasn't got the planning staff and the calibre of staff that we have. And I can understand it from a smaller council that they might not have those skills and they might not have those staff and they might not have the experience. But as a Kingborough councillor, I would vote no to this recommendation.
Anyway, to try and avoid long debate, just if anyone thinks we should, speak now. Councillor Westwood, are you going to speak for?
Yes, I quite like this motion. I found it quite difficult when I was elected to council to become an instant member of the Kingborough Planning Authority. I certainly rely very heavily on the recommendations of our staff, and I find planning is a very complex area, which our planners have university degrees to be able to do. And I'm not sure what the answer is, but I do certainly relate to a comment in here which refers to wearing two hats. And I find sometimes as a member of the planning authority, I am bound to make a certain decision based on the act that I know full well the community might not necessarily support. I guess that works the other way around as well, but I can relate to this and... Yeah, I don't mind the idea of someone else doing it.
Councillor Reid?
I've got a question, which I don't know whether you can answer or not. Just following on from what Councillor Fox mentioned earlier, I was reading this as if our council staff, with their qualifications in that relevant area, would still make an assessment, but then the decision would be made by an independent panel that is appointed. Is that how... Am I reading that process correctly?
Mr Arnold, how did you read it?
Through you, Mr Mayor. That's exactly how I read it, Councillor Reid.
Thank you. If that's the case, then I do support this, because I believe that it is very, very difficult for us at times, and I can think of many occasions over the last... 8 or 9 years where we have been placed in difficult situations because we do wear two hats. And it is always, I've tried to separate that as much as possible, and I have had to then, I've been forced to vote for things that I do not agree with, and it's very difficult for the community to understand that. And I've also seen situations where councillors haven't separated the roles like that, and they have allowed their opinion on whether they like something or don't like it come into it and have voted accordingly. And that is a very messy situation to deal with, and that's where we end up with appeals and appeals and appeals. So the idea of separating the two I think is a sound one, and I would really like to see us support this, and I would really like to see this debate play out at LGAT and what the state government's response to this would be. Clearly it is underway in other jurisdictions and it has worked, and I think that we would be doing ourselves a disservice if we didn't at least allow the debate to take place.
Okay, given that we now have thought was going to be pretty clear. You can speak on either direction now, Councillor Cordova and Councillor Mitchell.
Thanks, Mayor. So very briefly, I don't want an independent panel. I think councillors are capable of wearing two hats. They've done it for years in Kingborough, and I think that's actually quite a good way of making sure that you don't end up with a position of, I guess, unelected and faceless panels making decisions that are unaccountable to the elected, the population that can elect them. I think that we have an inbuilt mechanism in democracy to remove, people that we think are making faulty decisions that aren't in accordance with the planning scheme, and that's called the elections, and they're in October of 2022. So because I don't want an independent panel, just checking with you, Mayor, that means I do not want to provide, as an alternative, the establishment of an independent development assessment panel to determine a permit application, and therefore I'm correct in thinking I should be voting no. I'm asking you to vote no. Thank you.
Councillor Midgley and then Councillor Street.
Thank you, Mayor, and thanks other councillors for sharing both sides, which I do sit on both sides of the fence in this, but I am interested to hear staff's... It's not helpful, but I am interested... I'm leaning more to know, but I am interested to hear very knowledgeable staff around the table in regards to the risks that they see us in voting.
Just so happens we have the former CEO of LGA here. Ms Stevenson.
This is certainly not a new topic, and in fact, in my previous life, I took a very similar debate to a mayor's workshop or a general meeting. I can't remember which one now. And the rationale at the time was the feedback we got in a post-election environment from new councillors who felt very torn about their ability to represent the community while wearing the very straight ruled planning hat. In terms of benefits, I think it does free up councillors' time to dedicate it more to the strategic land use planning aspects, which I think is what shapes communities, not the development applications alone. On the other side, some of the issues raised by other elected members from other councils in previous debates included the fact that local knowledge meant you could influence the conditions of applications in a way that might not be possible for someone working on a regional or a statewide basis. They wouldn't necessarily be able to nuance the permits. There are different models, and some of them work better than others. I certainly think there needs to be a local government voice in any panel, not necessarily the council who've got an application before a panel. But it does mean that councillors, if they're not having to consider the DA, they can be advocates for or against an application. So that's really the two sides of it. It can work. It needs to be the right model.
Councillor Street. That's a very good answer. Councillor Street.
Thank you, Mayor. Look, I agree with Councillor Cordova on this one. And I've said it 100 times before that in planning matters, there are always matters to do with the planning scheme on which reasonable minds might differ. And so I think it's important that councils have a role to play in terms of making decisions where reasonable minds might differ and using local knowledge and using the feedback of the community to make those decisions on matters where reasonable minds might differ. There's no doubt that there are clear-cut parts of the planning scheme. You either meet an offset or you don't meet an offset. You either meet a height limit or you don't meet a height limit. But where we talk in terms of development intensity and what's a reasonable use for an area, these are things where there is a bell curve of opinion and we get put on council to make a decision across that bell curve, and people vote for us based on where they think we're going to sit and where we tell them we're going to sit. And I think that that's really important. And it would concern me to remove that to an independent, albeit professional, panel where ratepayers and residents don't necessarily have that input into where they would like decisions to go. on those matters where reasonable minds might differ. So for that reason, I'd vote against investigating this further.
Councillor Watts.
Thank you, Mayor. I also support the no on this particular item. Planning at times is not easy, but at the end of the day, it shapes the municipality. Now, we talk about LUPA, the land use planning. It would have a land use planning and we'd have no effective tool to administer it. We talk about our planning scheme. We would have a planning scheme, but we would have no effective tool to ensure that the planning scheme was met. From time to time, we have set strategic directions for the development of this municipality. No point doing that if all of a sudden we're no longer going to be involved in planning issues, because planning issues, regardless, will go their own way without any reference back to us and where we want to take and where, the most importantly, the community want us to take the municipality into the future. When we start looking at costs, we can look at the additional costs. Does that mean how many of these special boards, if you like, are going to be established? Is there going to be one for each municipality? Is there going to be one for each two councils? We're talking about a legal and a public administrator background chair. Don't come cheap. Two or more specialist members, I take planners, won't come cheap. May include a local government and or community representative. So if you're paying the others, you've got to pay them. All of a sudden, it's going to cost us the same as it cost councillors allowances to set up this board. From the general public, what do they want? Do they want someone to control and administer going forward, or do they want a council? My suggestion is they might well want the planning board and get rid of the council, because the council, having no effective operation into the future that they want of this municipality. We talk about the future directions. We've spoken about years to come to keep away from ribbon development through our towns. If we set up a board and that was to occur, we can stand back, we can yell all we want, the community can yell all they want, and it will go ahead. Sure, they will get appeals the same as we do. But at the end of the day, I believe that we vote with the planning scheme, and I think it's up to each and every councillor then to explain it to our community residents why and how you did that particular vote. And the more and more I see of this, I think it's an escape by one or more councillors who really find planning too hard. If they find planning too hard, perhaps they should vacate as councillor and let someone else in who wants to do the work.
Councillor Bastow.
Thank you, Mayor. I'll be supporting a no vote on this. I keep coming back to that the fence at down at Kingston Beach, which under all the planning rules was disallowed. They spent, was it 26 pages of why heritage architects, and thank goodness sensible councillors who knew the area and knew that it wouldn't be destroying it, were able to get it through. Now, I think that's one of the things. We know our area. I might not know every street in Taruna, but I might know every street on Bruni Island. You know, I mean, we know our area. And I think it's very important that the councillors are the ones that make this decision so that we can say we were part of it.
Good. Thank you, Councillor Bastow. Any other contributions? We're only going to vote at the end, but so what I've heard here is the majority are a no on this. So when we move, because we've just discussed, someone's going to move a no, and then we'll vote on that. Okay, just do a quick informal show of hands for the yes. Raise your hand if you're a yes to voting for this yes. There's only two. If you're a no, please raise your hand. Yeah, so we've got a pretty heavy majority for no. Future gaming legislation exposure drafts. Let's just see how it goes. Anyone want to speak for a yes? Councillor Cordova.
Thanks, Mayor.
Oh, no, I've learnt.
We want... So I moved a motion earlier to try and get us to get the community's opinion of Pokie's engagement. I happen to know that there has been some polling done in Kingborough, and it's unequivocally, overwhelmingly, people actually don't want pokies in their pubs and clubs in this municipality, and the evidence is overwhelming that pokies cause harm. They're an absolute scourge, and they're a detriment. They're a detriment for not just the people who suffer from them, but also the businesses as well. And it siphons great amounts of money away from this state and onto the mainland. In response to this question, I actually wanted that consultation to take place because I knew that at some stage or another we will be faced with this community interest test, and as Legat has pointed out, according to this future gaming legislation exposure draft, the background comments, council is one of the key stakeholders. So I'm very interested in seeing us hold the government to account and make sure that they honour their commitment to give us our 5-week consultation period. My question is... have I interpreted that correctly, that what were the alternatives? Could we get more than a 5-week consultation period, or 5 weeks was all they were offering, or what's the background of this?
Ms Stevenson might be the most qualified. Ms Stevenson.
Through you, Mayor. The consultation and communication protocol between local government and state government provides for a minimum of 5 weeks consultation on legislation, so that's where the 5-week period has come from. There is no reason why they couldn't offer more. They do for some other legislation.
Thanks. And so we're not ruling out getting more by asking the government to at least stick to their end of the bargain by giving us at least five. So we're not losing any opportunities, but we're just getting what was committed to us in the first place. So I'm a yes, I think.
Does anyone a no?
Yeah, I'm a no.
All right. Councillor Grace and then Councillor Westwood, if Councillor Grace doesn't cover it. Councillor Grace?
I just think it's discriminating against other betting facilities. I mean, you vote against... gambling machines, and you're not going to vote against the horse racing or keno or any of that stuff. And I must confess, I don't mind throwing a two bob or two in the pokies. I think there's certainly room for a bit of review, particularly the way things are going at the moment when I'm losing. You know, I don't mind when I'm winning, but no, look, in fairness, we never used to have the poker machines many years ago. We used to have to drive all the way up to the Sandy Bay if we wanted to play the games. I think there's a lot of people that need that sort of relaxation. To be quite frank, I don't use it. I use the poker machines as a relaxation away from other parts of my life. And like most that go to the horse racing or... the greyhounds or whatever they want to do. I mean, they go there hopefully not thinking you're going to win every time you go there, because you won't. And I know that. And I just go there and I talk to other people. But I believe that, leave them as they are. No.
Councillor Westwood.
Thank you, Mayor. I don't know that there's any suggestion that the state government won't be observing the 5-week consultation period. I'm not aware of anything that indicates otherwise. And I think, so I guess, you know, they've said specifically here in the minutes from the Premier's Local Government Council meeting on the 6th of September, although the statewide partnership agreement between the state government and the local government sector has expired, the government continues, as a matter of protocol, to observe the 5-week consultation period contained in that agreement. So my reading of that is that we will be getting a 5-week consultation period, and so therefore we don't need to lobby for something that may or may not happen, that has already been determined that it will happen.
Okay. There are any other strong views that haven't been made already? Let's just do the informal show of hands then. If you're a yes, can you just raise your hand? Council Street. Okay, I've got a yes, broadly only two against, so we'll go to yes for that. And the deferral of draft future gaming bill. Sorry, I won't be so sure other people might or might not want to speak. Councillor Cordova.
Thanks, Mayor. Same as before, except to say that the SEIS report is really in-depth. It was last released in, I think, March 2018. So they're every 3 years. Maybe I better ask one of the staff, how often is there SEIS?
Ms. Stevenson, do you know the answer?
It is more recent than 2015, but I can't recall the frequency.
A question,
Mr. Arnold might have some more.
Through you, Mr. Mayor, I understand it requires review every 3 years.
And my question is, what is the what might be the impact of allowing them to go early before the study is made available? Why is Legat so keen to make sure that we get the information before we...
It's not Legat, it's been brought by, I think this is by Glenorchy City Council, that's brought it up as a notice of motion, but I'm not sure we've got the answer. Yeah, you'd have to ask Glenorchy.
Well, so that's okay, Mayor. Basically, I used to work at the Social Action Research Centre, Anglicare Tasmania, and so we spent all this time collecting all of the information, the facts and the personal stories of, I think, about 5,000 people who were personally affected by pokies. And one of the main sources of reliable data that we used, of recent data that we used, was the SEIS, the Social and Economic Impact Studies. To be able to make an informed decision without that information would be probably quite irresponsible, I think. But more importantly, if the cost of waiting for it to come out is not long, as it appears to be, it's going to be completed by the second quarter of 2021, and there seems to me no reason why we would have to rush these things and try and rush it without the information. Let's just wait until we get the information. And so based on that, the deferral of draft future gaming bill, I will be voting yes, because I want to wait until we have that SEIS report completed.
No, the lights are on, so in which case, do we want to raise your hand if you're a yes for this? Councillors Fox, Cordova, and Midgley, and if you're against this, please raise your hand. Sorry? Oh, okay. Well, it makes it hard. So you're 3-4. 1, 2, 3, and they're against. Yep, 4. So, right, no for that. Okay, so just looking for someone to move and second this. Moved by Councillor Loss, seconded by Councillor Westwood. So the Council authorised the Mayor regarding the voting at the upcoming LGAT general meeting as follows. Planning authorities, no. Future gaming legislation exposure draft, yes. And deferral of future gaming bill, no. All those in favour, please say aye. Those against, motions carried unanimously. Okay, it is now 7:30. We have a lot to go, but we can do one more. Next one is curbside waste and recycling extension to Tinderbox. There's a recommendation on 48. Moved by Councillor Grace, seconded by Councillor Midgley. Councillor Grace.
No need to speak on this. We've had a debate on it before.
Thanks, Councillor Grace. Any comment? Councillor Midgley.
I'll just quickly speak on this. Councillors know, this came to us with very little community input, so there was a motion to send a letter to each household in the Tinderbox area, and I note that there has been a significant response than the original, and it has still come back not to have a recycling service in the area. So thank you, staff, for putting in the effort to do this. Thanks to all those who did say yes or no, and this is what we've come up with. So it's good to be, I guess, an understanding of what the community needs are.
They've already had some... Oh, Councillor Westwood.
Thank you, Mayor. Yes, I support this, and thank you for surveying residents at the Blackmans Bay end of Tinderbox. I guess the only issue I have is that if someone doesn't return their survey, they're marked as not supporting the service. I'm not quite sure that that's really the right way of going about it.
But even within that, even if you don't do that, it's still a majority of people who did give a submission said no. Councillor Bastone.
It's the Howden extension to Tinderbox Road is the one that I find not quite so clear cut, 24 residents in favour of the extension and 23 responses against. So in that case, it was only the people who didn't bother to respond who have swung the balance. So in fact, the people who responded, the majority were in favour of it being extended.
I'm sorry, apologies for my earlier response that you're right.
And so I think that this one is not clear cut. The Blackmans Bay end of Tinderbox maybe, but the Howden extension, I'm not so happy with our decision not to go ahead with it.
Look, I take on board Councillor Bastone's point. I must admit, when I read it, I must have been not thinking clearly. But even so, I mean, I think it would be hard to go ahead and add that additional charge to all residents when there was only 24 in favour and nine didn't bother to, 23 against and nine didn't respond. Which you can't take as certainly not can't take it as a rousing support for a new service. So I think it would be hard to add the new service on the basis of that feedback. But I'm not sure, and this is the second time this has failed recently in terms of when we went to Kettering and asked the same question and it failed, and we've gone to Tinderbox and it's failed, and I'm wondering whether we're going about it the right way, but I can't think of a fairer way to do it other than to ask people, and really if the majority say yes, then we support it, and if they don't, then we don't. In this case, as Councillor Bastone says, it was line ball in terms of 24-4 and 23 against, but there was nine that didn't respond, so yeah, it's a tough one. Councillor Bastone.
I was just going to say we did do it for the Sandfly extension, I think, and that was extended. So
that's right, it was only a few, wasn't it?
Yes, yeah, but it was six.
Yeah.
So we did the same survey there.
I think
and
it was sort of less than 12 or something, yeah. Okay, to sum up, Councillor Grace? No. Okay, the motion reads by Councillor Grace, seconded by Councillor Mitchell, that Council does not extend the curbside collection service to the Tinderbox area. All those in favour, please say aye. Those against, motion is carried unanimously. Next item is, do we want to do one more?
Yeah.
Footpath provision and maintenance policy, that starts on page 49, and there's a recommendation on page 51. Moved by Councillor Reet, seconded by Councillor Cordova. Councillor Reet.
Thank you. This is providing a new draft policy on footpath provision and maintenance of footpaths. We haven't had one previously yet, which is surprising considering we have 242 kilometres of sealed or gravel footpaths around our municipality, and I have to say that was a figure that was quite mind-boggling when I read it. I didn't realise it would be that extensive. I was very pleased that the Access Committee was given the opportunity to have input into this, and that there was most of what they have actually did provide has been incorporated, and so we're very grateful for that. I did want to just talk about pavers. There is a section in here that says that pavers would be one of the type of treatments that may be considered, and it would be considered. I realise there's a bit of a rider on that, saying it would be considered on a case-by-case basis, but I think it would be remiss of me not to make the comment on behalf of the Access Committee that pavers do create a significant issue for people with disability and with mobility devices, just as they do for people who are pushing prams as well. The pavers have a tendency over time to shift, and that shifting creates uneven surfaces, and those uneven surfaces, particularly for somebody who has a physical condition that is very sensitive to bumps and things like that, so severe arthritis, different conditions where people are in wheelchairs or other mobility scooters, that can create a huge problem. And we're seeing in that section of Kingston Beach, for example, where there are still some pavers there along the esplanade, that does create a very large barrier for people with disability. So I would like to think that we wouldn't see too many cases where pavers were accepted. I am really pleased to see that incorporated, though, was the suggestion that that was put forward by the Access Committee that reiterates that it be non-slip surfaces that are placed everywhere, because once again, and it's not just people in wheelchairs, but for anyone who has a walking stick or crutches, if they are, there are slippery surfaces, then it can result in an accident, which we would not like to see. This does address DDA standards, as it needs to. I think the hope was of the Access Committee, though, that we don't just aim for the minimum DDA standards, but that we aim to exceed them, and that we, in looking at the footpath design and the redevelopments that take place around the municipality, that we look wherever possible not just to meet those minimum requirements, but to do better, so that we can actually say that we are, as a municipality, making the area as accessible as possible for our residents who do have live with a disability, or who come here to work within the municipality or to visit. So that will of course come down to individual projects, and I'll continue to raise that as we have projects come before council. Having said that, I the only other point I wanted to make, and you'll not be surprised, I think the General Manager won't be surprised that I'm going to make this, it's about the template. The template is, I'm not obsessed by templates, I'd just like to say that. However, we seem to have an issue where we can't get one template that we have across all policies. So if you compare this template to the following ones for the following two policies, they are different. And I thought we'd resolved the problem. It's getting better, but there is a difference in the way that things are set out here and in the following two policies. I think for clarity, for staff, for councillors, and importantly for members of the community who are reading these, we need to have the identical template used for all policies that we have. It can't be that hard. I'll leave it at that. Thank you, and I'm happy to endorse the policy.
I haven't got a lot to say. I'm happy with the report. I noticed here 32 k's of hot mix. I've raised this at council level before, particularly down south. There seems to be quite a lot of hot mix footpaths, and I questioned why they were ripped up and replaced with concrete, when in fact the base was fairly solid in those footpaths. They were put down, most of them were put down with the red scheme money in that down south in our area. I don't see in the report so much about what they will be replaced with in the future, but one would think common sense that they'd have they could have an inch or so of hot mix put over them, and they'd be there for another 30 years or more, because that's how long they've been there, some of those footpaths. As far as the width of the footpath, I think it's something also that council should be looking at, and as Councillor Rita said with the Asset Committee, the width of the footpaths are becoming a major problem in some of the rural areas too, because the footpaths are not wide enough with mums with a twin pram. I've had quite a few complaints. So there must be a population boom in twins, I'm not sure. But there's quite a few complaints about the bigger prams they can't get through. And as we know, we've had a lot of problems and complaints about when the rubbish day's on, people with their walkers. Hutchins Street's a good example, but we don't need to go on about more. But I'm not quite sure how this policy will set. This is more, I think, in providing maintenance. And I go back to say, too, with maintenance work, our hot mix trucks around most streets once a year or twice a year or whatever, if they see a hole in a footpath, one common sense while they're there would be to put a shovel of hot mix and fix the problem. But if it's concrete, they can't. We've got more accessible maintenance with hot mix rather than we have hot mix, if you know where I'm coming from. So we'll see what happens.
Councillor Baston.
Thank you. My concern is on the curb ramp upgrades. One of the problems I've noticed is the way the ramp is constructed, and I'm just wondering whether we can have something in here that says that it shouldn't have like a hole, a channel in it where the water goes through, where bike tyres get caught, but also prams get caught on them. So I'm just wondering if there can be something in here about the type of ramp going off the footpath onto the road.
Mr. Reid.
Through you, Mayor, I'm not quite sure what you're actually referring to there. Certainly all our curb ramps there don't have that sort of configuration. You may be thinking about driveway accesses, which every now and again do have a fillet in them, which is generally where people are actually struggling to get out of a fairly non-standard driveway there and are scraping their car there, and there's a little concrete fillet that goes down in the gutter, and you may be referring to that. But certainly any of our curb ramps that council's actually putting in there don't have anything of that configuration in it, or if they do, they shouldn't have. So certainly the new standards do not. Yep, that's fine. But that, in terms of the standard drawings and the standard way they're constructed there, you wouldn't put a channel in the curb.
Councillor Fox, and then Councillor Cordova.
I guess I'm quite happy with this because I think it's important to have it acknowledged that there is a need for footpaths in new developments particularly. I note that there is an allowance for a wider footpath when it's a shared footpath, but there isn't any acknowledgement that sometimes it's safer for children walking to school or riding their bikes to school to be further away from the actual carriageway, so they're not up against the edge of the actual road. And I think that's an important consideration which hasn't been addressed in this document. I was wondering if staff could comment.
Mr. Reid.
Through you, Mayor. I guess for new developments you have more control because it tends to be a greenfield situation there. In certainly some of our existing areas there, you're, I guess, a bit hamstrung by the available nature strip you have. So the positioning of your footpath there in many areas there quite often abuts a curb. Occasionally you get the ones which tend to be back on the property boundary there with a small nature strip in between there. But a lot of it comes down to available room. So in a lot of cases there, the only thing that you do have is not a nature strip, just a footpath. So, it certainly may give a perception there, particularly on roads there, which may have a higher traffic speed there, that there's more than the curb that's actually in the way. But they're the constraints we have to deal with on a case-by-case basis.
Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. And I'd like to thank the author and the authoriser of this policy and the report, and also thank Councillor Reid particularly for her contribution, and also Councillor Fox. I think there have been some really great points that have been raised, and particularly about working with our Access Committee. It's so important, and I'm really glad to see it come to fruition in really tangible, meaningful ways. Something that I just wanted to raise, which hasn't yet been mentioned, is in item 6, environment. Under this policy, street trees will be protected and retained where possible when footpaths are upgraded or new footpaths are installed. And a well-maintained urban footpath network encourages active transport for short local trips, lowering dependence on motor vehicles and subsequently assists the lowering of carbon emissions. Really important for health and well-being, and we find that the more that we beautify our neighbourhoods, the more we make them clean and green and walkable, and indeed that's part of our Kingston Place strategy and to enhance the CBD, but it is true for all of our townships and urban built environment. The more we make it clean, green, bring nature into the centre and make it easier to get around, easier for humans to stop, stick, stay and spend, and the happier we'll be and the healthier we'll be, and also the better our businesses will do. So thanks very much. I'm proud to second this motion.
Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. Agree with everybody. It's fantastic to have a footpath policy, as we do not have one. So when I ride, walk around Spring Farm and notice the kind of ad hoc footpaths around the development, it'd be great, as it says, to have a footpath on both sides of the road and around cul-de-sacs in concrete into a minimum width of 1.5 metres and in concrete into a width of 1.8 to 3 metres for primary urban links. I think that's really important. It sets a great precedent for, as we know, the growing number of developments that are coming to us in Kingborough. Just a comment on what Councillor Fox said in regards to, I guess, that the footpath being close to the road verge there. For new developments, and I'm wondering if we need to have a point in that point under urban developments there, because it would be great to see, rather than the footpath being right on the road verge, to actually have a nature strip and then the footpath. How can we make sure that in new developments that happens? Because again, it's those aesthetics that Councillor Cordova talked about in regards to hopefully a future street tree policy and things like that. Be much nicer to look at that in these new subdivisions that are happening, that we have the nature strip then a footpath. Could we at all add a line, or could there be something in the policy that perhaps can ensure that happens in the future? I mean, is that the way? I noticed that the new subdivisions do not have that, and aesthetically it doesn't look so great, but how could we sort of...
Mr. Reeve.
I guess the policy itself actually refers to the type of documents that we use at the moment there, which are typical documents that are actually used statewide. So they are things like the standard drawings that are used by most councils there, or the subdivision guidelines that are used by many councils as well at the same time there, that set some criteria of you know, what developers would be doing in particular locations. So to a degree, it's better to actually influence those processes as compared to trying to put in your own process there, or trying to capture that process within a policy like this. So I think that might be a little bit difficult to do. I mean, there is advantages and disadvantages for what you're actually saying there. I guess one of the disadvantages that probably hasn't been voiced there, but it's probably worthwhile noting there, is that there certainly was in the past quite a few streets, particularly in some of the older areas around the municipalities in Hobart there, which did allow for those small sections of nature strip in front of their curb there. The problem with them is that people just didn't look after them, so they ended up becoming a little bit of an eyesore in terms of that. So there is some other little disadvantages that actually go with that. So it would be better in my mind to actually have this conversation in a bit more detail with the other councils to try and get a bit more of a consistency in terms of that, which I think would also be good for developers as well, because that's what developers crave when they are developing, is consistency across councils.
Thank you. And I understand at the moment that other greater Hobart councils are developing their footpath policy. Not all councils have one, and actually one of the items on the next Cycling South agenda is going to be looking at, because the naming of the footpath provision and maintenance policy, when the KBAC had a look at some of the members of that, or the previous members, we had a working group meeting on Friday, they questioned the actual name of the policy regarding like a shared footpath policy and things like that. So we know that many different councils call it different names. And Mr. Reeve stated that, you know, it's great to have this, we need to have it now, it's really important, but there is some flexibility and perhaps some learning from other councils about some amendments, you know, in the future. But thank you very much for putting this up, and thanks, Councillor Reet, for the sharing of the committee's views.
Councillor Wass.
Thank you, Mayor. I believe that our footpaths, regardless of the type, need to be wider than they are. I think we need to set about a wider width. The worst part, of course, is that if it's a 1.2 metre, it's really an Indian file going each way and one of them steps out on the road, whereas if it was a 1.8 metre, we might get some passed. And I think we've got to look at that, particularly with children, the elderly, and particularly blind corners on roadways where they can step out. The other thing that wasn't covered, and I would like to see covered a little bit more, and that is the footpath maintenance. Now, what we've failed to cover there, or it's remained silent, and I guess it's probably already in our thoughts, but there's nothing in writing to say that we will ensure that all vegetation will be kept back off the footpath so people can actually walk on the footpath and not have to get off the footpath to go around vegetation. The other aspect too is some of that vegetation in Weedek can create the footpath to be slippery, and we have had cases in the past where people have been walking down, all of a sudden they're skating, their legs are in the air and their head hits the ground. We don't want to see that to anyone, but I'd like to think that we would cover those two aspects.
Mr. Reeve?
Through you, Mayor. So certainly the policy itself refers to a set of guidelines that is publicly available to everybody in terms of our nature strip guidelines there. So part of that information is actually covered within that. So there's a whole heap of criteria we have for the public there in terms of plantings on nature strips and site distances and a whole raft of other things as well. So that would be a subservient guideline to this particular policy there. So I think that covers up on the point that you're actually mentioning there.
Yeah, and if I can, Mayor, the reason I mention that, it says all municipal footpaths are to be maintained to a condition that satisfies safe, and the other part just makes them unsafe.
To sum up, Councillor Fox.
I have a question. Have we taken into account the fact that we have three rubbish bins that are going to be put on these footpaths, like waste, recycling and green waste rubbish bins? So we've got something every week, and sometimes mostly two things every week. And is there an expectation that the width of the past is going to suit the people of the future who have got all these big bins sitting on the footpath on a weekly basis?
Mr. Reeve.
Through you, Mayor. That's an interesting question. I suppose that's one of the problems we actually have with multiple bins actually going out in most locations there, and dealing with that on those garbage days, bearing in mind that, you know, generally the bins are out there for that one day in that one area there, but it does cause inconvenience for people who are wishing to traverse down through that footpath, particularly if they're actually in something which is a little bit larger, whether that be a scooter or whether that be a double pram or whatever it happens to be, based on personal experience. So I think it's not explicitly in here, because the width you would need to actually try and deal with that would be more again, but it's certainly something that could be considered. I know other councils have thought about this but certainly haven't implemented it as of yet, so it's probably a point that's worthwhile considering perhaps in the future, in terms of that, particularly if councils actually go down the track of, as they may have done elsewhere on the mainland there, of even additional bins to that. So then it becomes, you know, a bigger issue, I think, to deal with. So it's a point well made. I don't think it's explicitly dealt with in here, but I think it certainly could be considered in the future.
Okay, to sum up, Councillor Reach? No. Okay, the motion moved by Councillor Reach, seconded by Councillor Cordova, is that the attached draft footpath provision and maintenance policy be endorsed. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Those against? Motion's carried unanimously. I should say at this point, though, Councillor Westwood was not here for the vote. She left the meeting at 7:42 p.m. Do we want a break?
Yes,
sir. Okay, good on you. So we'll come back at 8 p.m, which is in 8 minutes' time. For those of you at home watching on Facebook, we'll keep